Let's stop and think for a few moments and speak to historian Dr. Eamon Phoenix. Eamon, good morning.
Morning, Frank.
This Sunday, Eamon, is Holocaust Memorial Day. We often hear it referred to, I think it's the 74th one. It's incredible when we do put the spotlight on exactly what is being remembered on Holocaust Memorial Day. Talk us through it, Eamon, please.
Well, of course, we're remembering something within still living memory. I mean, there are lots of people around who were living when the Holocaust occurred in the 1940s. And it's the only example in history that we know of an attempt by a government, by a regime, albeit a fascist dictatorship, to murder an entire people, essentially the Jewish race in Europe at that time. And of course, the whole thing reverts back to Adolf Hitler, who was a failed artist, who became a corporal in the First World War, and like many Germans and German soldiers, felt that there had been a betrayal of Germany. This led to its defeat. And his chief scapegoat, even as a young man, were the Jews. He believed that the Jews were an obstruction to German progress, that they were, a parasite race, a parasitic race, which must be eliminated. And Hitler in prison in the mid-1920s crystallized that in his book Mein Kampf, My Struggle. The Jews must be destroyed. Now, he was seen as a crackpot in those days, you know, with the following around him. But the massive unemployment following the Wall Street crash in 1929 led to the rise of the Nazi Party in Germany, fastening on all these grievances of people. And, of course, Hitler came to power in 1933 and set up a Nazi dictatorship.
Just on that, Eamon, because this is something that's often debated. When, you know, people say, you know, conversationally, oh, but he was a dictator, he came to power. Now, the reality is he was elected to power. But did the German people elect him on a ticket to eradicate the Jews?
Absolutely not. No, he was elected to resolve unemployment. Actually, the phrase, to make Germany great again, it has modern resonances, you know, to find Germany living space, what he called Lebensraum in Europe. This was his great phrase in the 20s, to regain the lost territories, the lost empire, and so on, to make the German people proud, change the whole dynamic. And it was President Hindenburg, an ex-World War I general, who actually appointed Hitler chancellor as the head of the largest party. And his first government was a coalition in 1933 to 34.
So just let me stop you again there. So the people who say, well, they voted for Hitler. They voted for Hitler. We very often talk about other regimes across the world and say, my goodness me, you know, how did they ever get into power? People will say, oh, well, people voted for Hitler. That is slightly misleading.
Well, they voted for Hitler's large numbers of Germans. A majority of Germans voted for the Nazi Party in 1933, seeking a way out of the hyperinflation, of the mass unemployment, of Germany's massive problems, which, of course, were part of a global recession in the 1930s. Hitler promised them that he could resolve these problems, resolve unemployment, and he appealed to a wide range of people, you know, farmers. He offered them kind of blood and land. He appealed to the small shopkeeper. He appealed to ex-soldiers, all those kind of people who had grievances and felt that the world that they had inherited was not a world fit for heroes. So he comes to power democratically, but of course he was to establish his dictatorship by the enabling law the following year. His party inspired the burning of the German parliament, the burning of the Reichstag. When the old president died, he made himself sort of Reich Chancellor and then Führer. He was the ultimate dictator of Germany. And, of course, he was beginning to expand German territorial power by the mid-late 1930s into Austria, into Czechoslovakia, and finally the attack in Poland, which brought about, of course, the Second World War. But his antipathy to Jews, which was shared by his kind of inner circle, but not by most Germans. Jews were a small minority, just a few percent in Germany. They had been prominent in the socialist movement, in science, in the law. all over Europe there were Jewish communities. I mean, in Belfast, the Jewish community was very much based in North Belfast from the late 19th century. We probably had at its peak about 2,500 to 3,000 Jews. The old synagogue is still there at Carlisle Circus. So they were a phenomenon. And in Belfast, for example, Otto Jaff, a prominent German Jew who arrived in the city in the kind of 1890s, not just became Lord Mayor, but became a major linen manufacturer. Harland and Wolff, you know, Gustav Wolff was a German Jew who set up with Sir Edward Harland the biggest shipbuilding yard in the world on Queen's Island. So, I mean, Jews had made a contribution to every country in Europe. But they were a small minority in Germany, and most German people didn't share this antipathy. But there was a lot of propaganda, which the Germans built up. There was Hitler's mass-produced autobiography, which was a hymn of hate against the Jewish race. They must be, in fact, he used the words quite early on, the word extermination. He used it for the first time in a speech in the Reichstag in January 1939, just before the outbreak of the war. He said that the war would lead to, quote unquote, the annihilation of the Jews. By March 1941, as Germany invaded France and looked as though it was going to win the war, Hitler gave orders to his henchmen Himmler and Goering that there must be a scientific program to destroy the Jews. And as he invaded Russia, this became a reality later on. In fact, as the German armies moved east, into Russia, they were accompanied by four special SS groups, probably in total about 3,000 men, whose task was to shoot all Jews and communists that they found. Now, this was only a minor part of the Holocaust, but it exterminated about 500,000 Jews. Ordinary German officers from the Wehrmacht, who were not Nazis, they were professional soldiers, they resented this. They saw these mass shootings out of hand of people for no good reason except their race. They believed that this was a stain on the honor of the German army. And so the policy was changed. Jews would be rounded up as the Germans expanded east, west, south across Europe, and they would be sent to special concentration camps. Most of these were in Poland, though they were elsewhere, and I've seen one, for example, in Holland, Westerbork camp, which was a transit camp from which something like 10,000 Dutch Jews, including, for example, Anne Frank, were actually sent from there to Auschwitz in Poland for the final solution. So eventually, of course, six death camps were set up in the early 1940s. The whole thing was authorized at a conference in Berlin in April 1942. It was called the Wannsee Conference. And the man who really enthused about it, apart from Hitler, was a man called Heydrich. Heydrich, who had become German governor of Czechoslovakia. He was assassinated in Prague, actually, in 1942. But the idea was to round the Jews up and really destroy them. In the end, of course, six death camps were set up, and in the end, 5 million Jews perished. There were also Romani people, there were left-wing people, there were communists as well, all rounded up. One of the saddest parts of this is really a local story, Frank, because something like 250 Jews in 1938 actually wrote to the government of Northern Ireland. This is the Craigavon government at Stormont. They were under massive pressure after Kristallnacht, the night of the broken glass, in November 1938, when thousands of German shops were looted, synagogues were burned, Jews were murdered at the behest of the Nazis. This was in peacetime, and this was a kind of a pogrom, if you like, to use that word, against Jews all over Germany, from Berlin to Munich, you know, to Cologne. This was happening. So against this background, Jews were being excluded. They were having to wear the Star of David. Apartheid was been introduced. And many of these Jews, hundreds of them, wrote to the Ministry of Commerce in Northern Ireland, you know, and they were really, seeking asylum here. They were saying, you know, I'm a Jewish doctor, I'm a Jewish lawyer, I'm a jeweler, I have no scope in my own country. Can you give me asylum? I can contribute something to your society there. We look at some of these letters. I mean, the applicants, they included a man called Albert Bornstein, a distiller of liquors. There was Marianne and Thomas Bein, Christian religion, silk fabric designers. There was Dr. Edmund Berliner, a manufacturer of leather belts from Bratislava. And they were writing to Stormont, Stormont, effectively, and saying, you know, I believe that we will survive if we're given entry. One lady wrote, I still mention my comrades and I are Jews, and she wrote, I am certain my son will be released if he could be found a job in Northern Ireland. This is before the final solution. Sadly, written on all these letters, all regret, no reply. Very few of any of them were admitted here, and they would have died in the death camp. So we have a contribution. We made a perhaps an unwitting contribution to what happened. And of course, by 1945, we had 6 million Jews dead. Now, of course, that led to a complete rethink in Germany. There were peace programs from the post-war years onwards. Anyone who denied the Holocaust, what we called Holocaust denial, be they intellectuals or anyone else, would be prosecuted. And in fact, we had an historian some years ago, you remember, David Irvine, who rejected the Holocaust and found himself actually charged because of that. So in many ways, the Holocaust has to be remembered. Not just was it man's inhumanity to man, it was an orchestrated pogrom and extermination program against a particular race, a particular religion.
Heartbreaking, and, heartbreaking.
Heartbreaking when you read the sad records, when you read the memoir of someone like Helen Lewis, whose whole family were exterminated, who made it here as a dance teacher in the late 1940s, and who she fell off the cart in Poland in the snow that was taking her to the death camp, was sheltered by Polish peasants, and survived to spend the rest of her life in Belfast. But a sad life, overshadowed by the murder of her entire family.
Incredible when you listen to that, to your fabulous commentary, Eamon. And I know on Holocaust Day, people also remember genocide in Cambodia, Rwanda, Bosnia, Darfur, places like that as well. But in particular, we remember the death camps of the final solution as carried out by the Nazis on the Jews during the Second World War. Eamon, thank you very much for coming on the programme.
Thank you very much indeed.
No wonder there is a day set aside for it. Holocaust Memorial Day is this Sunday.